Blog Talk Radio.
Taking time out of your day, especially with the time difference, because you're in London, right?
I am, absolutely. Tuesdays are a good day for me, so normally I would be packed, you know, working it. But
I always feel a little bad with trying to get people from all over the country, all over the world, because I'm just like, the time difference, how's that going to work? But thank you so much, I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So first, I just want to go ahead and start off by letting you introduce yourself to viewers, and you can let them know what you do, and then we'll dive right into the conversation, and I'll ask you the questions from there.
Okay, so hello, everyone. My name is Somi Bennett, or Dr. Somi, as people like to call me. I'm a biomedical scientist as well as a to help them learn how to eat healthier diets that, you know, try to balance their hormones, lose weight if necessary, break the diet cycle, and literally, you know, try to alleviate inflammatory conditions that they may have. So that could include things like type 2 diabetes, fibroids, PCOS, anything that has inflammation, which is literally every single condition has an inflammatory component. So my job is to teach you how to eat a healthier diet that could provide the health goals that you're looking to achieve.
Okay, absolutely. So my first question to you is just about dieting in general, because we know that people automatically, when they go on their health journey, the first thing most people talk about is losing weight, and they're quick to say, I'm going to go on this keto diet. There's so many different diets out there, right? And especially I find with women, we're always gravitating towards going on a diet. Why do you think so many people choose to diet in order to lose weight versus other methods or avenues? What have you found?
So I think that most people don't or refuse to understand the concept of making lifelong changes. Mm-hmm. They feel like the psychological cost of giving up their poor dietary habits are far too great, and so they try to opt for quick weight loss, quick fix diets. Mm-hmm. That only tend to, they need to be on for just a few. Then they lose the weight and they want to revert back to making poor dietary choices, which of course leads to weight gain, and then the weight loss cycle repeats itself over and over again. So it's really the shiny object syndrome that most of us women tend to, you know, we fall into the trap of. If we can get out of that idea that losing weight and is really more about making healthier lifestyle changes, we'll stop being swayed by the shiny object syndrome and, you know, continuously falling into the diet trap, or continuously feeling, oh, we need to do the keto diet today, or we need to go vegetarian, or we need to be pescatarian, or we can only eat cabbage soup, or, you know, all the other crazy things that, you know, are
So what would you say then is the most essential component to losing weight? If someone comes to you and they say, you know, doctor, I'm really trying to lose weight and I just feel like the only way I can do that, you know, is through the diet, how do you typically respond to them and what do you offer?
Okay, so trying to lose weight is about three pillars. So this is what I teach to all of my clients. It's about the habit, it's about having accountability, and it's about changing your mindset. You need to have those three things in place. And once you have them in place, you'll come out of the idea of thinking that you need to lose weight. You see, the thing is, most people think that they need to lose weight, but if you look deep down, there's a greater picture towards what you're trying to achieve that might not necessarily be weight loss. Weight loss might be the side effect, but that is not really what you're trying to achieve. It might be, for example, that you have high cholesterol. It might be that you have high blood pressure. It might be that you have type 2 diabetes. It might be that you have joint pain or you have back pain or you have having difficulty just living a normal, healthy life. And yeah. So what then that, you know, it turns into is the fact that there's something in your diet or the types of foods that you're eating that are causing you to have all of those little, those symptoms that you're suffering with. And once we can change your eating habits so that we're working towards alleviating those symptoms, you will find that if weight loss is something that you really need to achieve, that will come as a byproduct of weight loss. So, I mean, as a byproduct of changing your diet. So first of all, we need to get your habits changed. We need to figure out what are the things that you're doing that are causing you to, you know, have the symptoms that you're having or causing you to pack on the excess pounds that you need to lose. Once we can figure out the habits that you need to change to help you accomplish those goals, those we'll work with at the same time as trying to change your mindset, you know, the things that hold you back, what are the limiting beliefs keeping you in the same position that you're in, and then as with working with me on a one-to-one basis, you have an accountability partner, so you have somebody who's constantly going to watch you, support, make sure that you're making all the right changes continuously and there are no breaks in there, and you know, the more you're able to keep this going on a consistent pattern, the more the jigsaw puzzle starts to fit into place, and then you can start to see that, you know, it is not as difficult as it is. It's something that you can do on a lifelong basis. And then it becomes a lifestyle change and not just I'm trying to lose weight and all I need to think of doing is eating absolutely nothing or cutting out a food group from my diet just to achieve the weight loss. When you come out of that mentality, you can achieve all the goals, you know, apart from the weight loss that you're trying to achieve, and it doesn't feel so difficult.
Right. No, that absolutely makes sense. I love especially what you said about having an accountability partner and just it starts with your habits, because I just feel like a lot of times, even I know for myself, it's just, you know, if there's nobody around you to kind of just follow through, you know, and check, just as your parents would follow through and be like, did you do your homework? You know, simple things like that. Kind of like, okay, nobody's going to know that I ate that donut that I shouldn't have had, you know, or something like that. So let's talk a little bit about setting healthy goals, because I know a lot of times people try to set goals, you know, in terms of health, like I'm going to lose, like a goal will just be, I'm just going to lose weight, or I'm going to, in May, go from, you know, a size 14 to a size 10, but I find that a lot of people are kind of confused exactly about how to set healthy goals and what goals look like. And there's some people who say you should always set SMART goals, and there's, you know, there's different opinions. So for you, what does setting healthy goals look like?
Okay, so I think that when it comes to health or any goal in general, whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, there's always the big picture or what the main goal.
Right.
And once you know what the main goal is, you then start to work your way down. Okay, so what is that main goal and how can I break it down into smaller bite-sized chunks that I can actually do and, you know, follow through? If you try and think of what your main goal is, so say for example now, let's keep it to weight loss since that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
You want to lose weight. Okay, the goal is to lose weight. Okay, for me, that's actually a secondary goal. Why do you want to lose weight? That's your main goal. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That main goal is what's going to drive you. If your goal is just to lose weight, you're not trying to achieve anything substantial there. And that's why most people tend to fall off the wagon. So first of all, determine what's the real goal that you're working towards. You're not just trying to lose weight just to lose weight. What's
right.
the main goal? And what's that tangible goal? Once you know what that tangible goal is, if weight loss is one of them, okay, you want to lose weight. Now, what are the habits that you need to change to help you lose weight? Do you need to start eating more vegetables? Do you need to stop eating so much fast food? Do you need to start drinking more water? Do you need to start exercising a little bit more?
Right.
Now, determine what those small specific goals are, and then you're going to trim those goals as well. So if you want to start eating more vegetables, and vegetables are not something that you eat all the time,
right.
Now think about how many times do you normally eat vegetables now? If, say, for example, vegetables are something that you never do because you hate vegetables, the first mini goal you can set for yourself is, okay, with every meal or every lunch or every dinner, I'm going to have a serving of vegetables. Once you do that once, do it twice, it becomes a habit. You feel comfortable and happy that you've achieved that goal. Now, take it off your list. Go on to the next thing. What's the next habit that you can form that would help you eat healthier and at the same time will help promote weight loss? That could be you could drink more water all the time. All what you drink right now is soda. Say, for example, you drink a liter of soda every day. Okay, I'm going to stop drinking a liter of soda every day and I'm going to start replacing that with water. You keep doing that until you get comfortable and choose the next goal. So even though your goal is weight loss, you can see that because you're not necessarily focusing on the numbers and you're focusing on the habits that you need to implement to help you reach that goal, you're going to start losing weight and it's not going to be so hard, so, you know, like a burden because you're doing simple changes slowly that carry you towards your goal and things you can always take things off as you achieve them, and that reward system is what is going to motivate you to keep going, and you'll keep going until you achieve the goal. So for me, setting goals is the first of all determine what the big picture is and then cutting it down into smaller bite-sized chunks that are actionable, okay, that you can actually do, and that will motivate you to keep going until you achieve what exactly it is that you want to achieve.
Ooh, interesting. So now this might kind of be a weird question, but I do know there are some people who maybe they set the goals, right? Like you said, figure out the main goal, the secondary goal. And then if they fail or don't follow through with it, they're really hard on themselves and they kind of believe in punishing themselves. You, as a nutritionist, what would you say to people who are just like, well, I told myself that I wasn't going to eat any candy or drink any soda, and I did, so now I'm telling myself I can't drink soda for the, you know, rest of the month. Do you think, like, kind of that negative reinforcement does work, or do you think it should always be positive? What are your thoughts about that?
So I think that, you know, what if you have the mentality, what you just described is what I call the all or nothing mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And all or nothing mentality is akin to dieting. So we need to make a dissociation with that. Because in real life, there's nobody on this planet that doesn't ever eat fun foods, is what I like to call them, not bad foods or junk foods. Everybody has a time when they crave something, whether that's a piece of chocolate, that's a donut, okay? You need to understand that this is part of real life. It's part of life. It's part of the environment that we live in nowadays, unless you're living in a rural area where they don't have any of those things. But because we live in modern society, you're always going to come into contact. So it is very unproductive to tell yourself, I'm never going to do anything. Never should never exist within in your vocabulary when it comes to anything in your life, really, because life changes, and especially diet, because the word never is always found in dieting. So first of all, you need to tell yourself, I'm not never going to have anything that I consider not so healthy. I will have them, but it's something that I'm not going to have very often or regularly. So when you're setting goals like that, don't tell yourself, I'm never going to have soda again. Say something like, okay, I'm not going to have soda regularly. I might have it occasionally and in small quantities. So whereas before, you would have had like a very large or extra large glass of soda, it could just be, okay, I'm just going to have a small cup of it and, you know, in small portions. And that's what I'm going to have, not never. If you have the small portion and you've allowed yourself that small portion, you're not going to feel guilty for having it. You're going to have your small portion, enjoy it, and move on because you've treated yourself and now you feel like you can carry on with your day. So all or nothing mindset is dieting. If you ever find yourself in a position where you're saying, oh, I've blown it, you should never feel like you've blown anything.
Yeah, I know for sure me, I'm guilty of doing that. I'm like, I've blown it, and I'm just like trying to punish myself, and then I find when you're trying to punish yourself, deny yourself something, you end up craving it even more, and it makes it so much harder.
Yeah, and then if you unfortunately, you know, succumb to the craving, you then binge and have 10 times the amount that you probably would have had. Yeah, we've all been there.
About nutrients and some of the healthy things. What are some of the nutrients that women should prioritize? Because I know you talk a lot about that in your videos and your posts. So what are some of those nutrients that women should prioritize?
Okay, so I picked out four main ones that I think are important. So first of all, folic acid. So folic acid, omega-3s, vitamin D and iron, I think, are some of the most important ones that the women need. Vitamin D mainly because, especially people of color, because of the color of our skin, we don't absorb as much vitamin D from sunlight, and, you know, because of the temperate weather as well, we don't necessarily get exposed to sunlight as much. And with the whole COVID pandemic thing, we now realize that vitamin D is actually not just important for bone health, but also immunity. So it's one, I picked it out just because I think that that's something that needs to be stressed for everyone. Every temperate regions, we need to make sure that we're getting enough vitamin D. So vitamin D is not very rich in many foods. I mean, you can only find it in fatty fish like salmon, fat fish like salmon and sometimes in mushrooms that have been UV treated, but we don't tend to eat much of those anyway, so it's a good idea to take a vitamin D supplement that goes, you know, round the board for everyone. But apart from vitamin D, folic acid is one that's very important, especially for women who are in the childbearing age and who hope to become pregnant, because it's important for the baby's health, for proper development of the spinal cord and the nervous system. So if we don't have enough folic acid, it could lead to neural defects in the baby. So it's important that we have a high intake of folate, and that's usually found in things like green leafy vegetables, beans, and legumes. They're very good sources of folate. Here in the UK, we advise women of childbearing age to take a folic acid supplement of 400 micrograms per day. But if you're eating a well-balanced diet that is rich in green leafy vegetables and legumes, you will have a good supply of folic acid in your, you know, circulating around your body. So apart from folic acid, iron is another one that's important because of, you know, our monthly losses due to the period. We tend to lose a lot of blood, so that goes with iron as well. So it's important for us to have, you know, high levels of iron. If you're deficient in iron, that could lead to things like fatigue, you know, tiredness, hair loss. So legumes, again, are very good sources of iron. Red meat for people who, you know, don't follow a vegan or vegetarian diet is another good source. But legumes are very high. I would say if you're eating things like legumes, you're having high vitamin C foods in your diet, because the iron content in plant-based foods are not as easily absorbed as they are from animal foods. So make sure that you're pairing your plant-based foods with lots of vitamin C-rich foods. So eat your beans with things like broccoli or drink orange juice. That would help with iron absorbability. And then the other one that I think is also very important, omega-3s. So omega-3s are very important for brain health. And once again, in pregnant women, it's particularly important for the growing fetus because it helps with the cognition and brain health. And so if you're not getting enough omega-3s while in the womb, that could affect their development once they come out. So you want to make sure that you're eating fatty fish. It's a good source. Things like nuts and seeds like walnuts, chia seeds, flax seeds, those are good sources, or you can take an argol supplement if you're a vegetarian. So those four nutrients, I think, for me are some of the most important for ladies.
Yep, thank you for sharing that, because I did not know that. I've heard about taking vitamin D, but I didn't know about all the other. So for someone who, like, for example, if I want to take a supplement for all of those, a vitamin for all of those, how, because I know a lot of times people don't know, like, is it, should I do, like, one for each day of the week? Can you take, like, vitamin D and the folic acid all in one day? Like, how can you do that?
So for me, I think lots of people know I'm very anti-supplement. I believe that you can get most or all of what you need by eating a proper diet. The only exception I make is for vitamin D, because we do not get enough exposure to sunlight anyway. If you live in, like, in the UK here, we hardly have sunlight. We only have sunlight 3 months out of the year. So, you know, it's very important to take a vitamin D supplement. And anyway, for, you know, most people who tend to throw up their skin, whether that's for religious reasons,
right,
or, you know, they're using creams that make them more susceptible to the sun, then, you know, vitamin D, taking a vitamin D supplement is absolutely essential. But with the other nutrients, if you're eating a well-balanced diet, you should get everything that you need. You see, the thing is that sometimes when we take supplements, we tend to over-rely on them and feel that, oh, because I'm taking a supplement, I can just eat a crash diet. And what people tend to forget is the supplements only provide single nutrients. There's so many other components in food, like polyphenols, antioxidants, you know, phytochemicals, all sorts of other beneficial nutrients, some of which we know and some of which we haven't even researched and don't know what exactly they are. But these things work together to keep us healthy. So if you rely on supplements, or you use an insurance policy or your main source of nutrition, you're going to be depriving yourself of various other nutrients that you're not going to get in those supplements that exist in food. So food should be your main priority to get those nutrients. And if you're in a situation where you're severely deficient and you need a quick fix, then the supplements are something that you can rely on. But otherwise, I would say, with the exception of vitamin D, you should be concentrating on eating real food to get the meat.
Okay, gotcha. That's good to know, because, like I was saying, I was literally thinking as you were talking, like, I need to go to Tom Thumb and get all these supplements.
No.
Definitely go, and I'll go to the grocery store and get the foods that can provide me with everything that I need. So what is the common mistake that you see regarding health and fitness?
I think that for people particularly who are struggling to, you know, change their habits or, you know, incorporate fitness into their lifestyle, I think it's a case of just trying to do too much all at once.
Okay.
I think, you know, if we can start by making small changes and building on as we go along, that's a more realistic approach. And also trying to listen to too many different people at the same time. You know, even within the field of nutritionists, even amongst us professionals, we don't always agree with each other. You find vegan nutritionists, you find keto nutritionists, you find low-carb nutritionists, you find pescatarian nutritionists. Everybody has their own individual beliefs. And so we don't even usually agree with ourselves, not to talk about influencers online or ghostwriters on the internet who just throw out all sorts of rubbish information. So if you're listening to a wide spectrum of people, you're never going to know what to do, because one day someone's going to tell you the keto thing is the best thing that was ever given to mankind.
Right.
And another thing is going to tell you, no, you need to be vegan now because that's the way to go. So you should work with an unbiased, I have to stress that word. You should work with an unbiased registered dietitian, nutritionist, to help you develop a personalized plan that's going to work for you. most times what tends to happen is that some of us professionals, we're heavily invested in what's working for us, and we fail to see beyond that and want to impose the same dietary strategies on our clients. And that's the wrong way to go about things. You have to look at the client and see what's going to be beneficial for their body and suggest the right thing for them and take the prejudice of what you think works for you or what the whole world should be doing, right, and not put that on your clients. So I think that for most people, I think the first step is actually looking for a credible source of information. And then if the person is qualified, have them create a plan for you that you can work with in small baby steps until, and then, you know, build up until you get to a place where you're comfortable in implementing all the right techniques and strategies that are going to be beneficial for you. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it does, right? Absolutely. Because what you brought up really good points. I remember when like going vegan was a thing, and then like you said, the keto diet, and you hear this person saying, well, I did this diet, and you know, or my nutritionist told me to do this, or my doctor told me to do this, or now with social media, you see tons of influencers on Instagram saying that, you know, they ate this, or they started taking this supplement, and they lost weight like this, or, you know, they gained muscle like this, and it's just like, it's just a lot of noise, and you can find yourself stressed and overwhelmed because you don't know, like, which way to go. And so my next question to tie into that for you is, how come you think when it comes to people going on these health and fitness journeys, I rarely hear people say, I'm going to consult with a nutritionist or registered dietitian. People will get a business coach, right? A personal trainer. They'll do anything that they need, a mental health coach. People will hire and go to the doctor, the dentist, all of those. But rarely do I hear people say, when they're trying to go on their health or fitness journey, I hired a, you know, registered dietitian, or I'm going to see my nutritionist to help me. Why is that, doctor? Why?
I honestly, I wish I knew the answer to that question. I knew the answer, but I could give it a good guess. Based on what I think, food is something that we all eat. We all eat. It's something that, you know, you kind of born into doing, right? There's food all around. So I think that in our minds, we all feel that we know what's best for us. But we probably do if we have our intuition not ruined from childhood or as we grow up and we see all these external influences. We probably would be able to determine what we need right now, what, you know, what we should eat and what we shouldn't be eating. But if you think about it, for many of us from childhood, we're introduced to processed foods. So all the sodas, the pastries and the cakes and all of those things, and very little portions of healthy foods. And so our idea of what we should be eating is already flawed. We don't know where to go or what to do. But then you go online and now you can research and somebody tells you you should do this and you should do that. It's the Dr. Google syndrome once again. And so you feel you feel that you probably know what you need to do and there's no need to ask for help, or you can be your own nutritionist and you can figure it all out. But then what ends up happening is that you a lot of noise comes into it, just like we spoke. Everyone is suggesting different things and then you get muddled up and, you know, you fall into trouble. And it's only when people start to develop eating disorders or they feel like they've been dieting for such a long time and nothing's happening, or their hormones become imbalanced, or they develop fertility issues or PCOS or, you know, one of those conditions, it's only at that point that they decide, okay, maybe I need to work with a professional to sort out these issues. But all of this can be easily mitigated if in the first instance you just sort out the help of a registered professional that can actually put a plan together, you know, to help. So yeah, I just think that when it comes to food, everybody thinks that they know it all, and everyone's a weight loss coach these days, or a dietitian, or something. And you kind of just need to be careful who you take advice from. I mean, with the whole era of influencers, most of them are trying to sell you a product. They're being paid to say what they have to say. So you know, if you fall into the trap of listening to what they're saying, because that's what they're saying, that's when you run into to problems. I know, like, I was vegan for a while, and I remember that when I came off the whole vegan bandwagon, I lost a lot of followers, and even till now, I still continue to do because I've changed my philosophy, but that's fine. You definitely want to be people
right.
who are not going to see what you're saying. But the point I was trying to get to is I received so many DMs during that time of vegan influencers who told me that they were no longer vegan, but they didn't have the guts to say they were no longer vegan because they would lose their followers and that was their source of income. And I smiled because lots of people are following them thinking that they're doing what they're saying they're doing, but they're absolutely not. So now think about that when it comes to people giving you nutrition advice. So they're probably not following themselves, but they're telling you what you want to hear because it's going to end them some money. So people need to be really careful about what they listen to on social media and the people who they consider nutrition coaches. That's the reality of life.
That's very true. Like, I think that now. People DMing me like, hey, we're interested in working with you. Like, if you, you know, follow us and, like, we'll ship you some free vitamins and you post and then, you know, and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't know anything about these vitamins, but they're so ready to, like, push it out and tell the public, like, they swear by these supplements or vitamins or things you can take. And it's just like, and people really do fall for it and they make money. I mean, it's scary to me, but I'm glad that you're obviously not one of those, and you're my question to you is kind of like how you got started in nutrition. Like, is it something as a little girl you or growing up, maybe when you're in high school, you always knew you wanted to be a nutritionist and a registered dietitian? What inspired you to get into this industry?
Okay, so I actually, as a child, one of my goals in life, or what I wanted to do, was to help people. Initially, I started off wanting to be a nurse, and then I changed my mind and decided I wanted to become a medical doctor. When I eventually got the offer to study medicine, I changed my mind. I didn't want to do that anymore. Instead, I wanted to do nutrition. Mm. And before I got to the place of wanting to do nutrition, I'd struggled with my weight throughout my teenage years, up until my early 20s. I'd done every single diet that was available on the market. Like, I if you mention the diet, I can tell you I've got the t-shirt for it. I've been there. And you know, after chronically dieting for over 15 years, I realized that, you know, this is not the way to live. I need to come off the diet, you know, cycle and actually learn how to eat properly. Because I knew that once I learned how to eat properly, I will never get swayed by any particular diet because I already know that I've got my nutrition in place.
Right.
And, you know, while I studied nutrition as part of my degree, I still wanted to learn a little bit more. So I did some more diploma courses, you know, in nutritional therapy, and then eventually decided to study nutrition at degree level to become a registered nutritionist here in the UK. So it was actually born out of my own frustration with dieting and, you know, wanting to learn how to eat properly. And once I nailed it and I figured out what the whole principles and pillars were, you know, the whole thing about changing your habits, and I figured out how you can eat a healthy diet sustainably while still enjoying all of the little treats that you like and without giving up traditional foods, it was something that, you know, I wanted to pass on to other women as well, because us women, we're the ones who tend to struggle with dieting way more than men. So I wanted to do my bit to help other women out there, you know, to get off the dieting cycle. So that's how I decided to become a nutritionist. Oh yeah, and the reason why I didn't go through with being a doctor as well is because I mean, no disrespect to the medical professionals, they do a lot for all of us, but I didn't want to be in a position where I was just handing out pills to people. Oh, I have a headache, just give them some paracetamol. thought, oh, I have this ache. Just, I didn't want to be that person. I wanted to be able to, you know, let's work at the root cause of what the problem is and let's change the food. Because food is medicinal in itself. It's from food that scientists have been able to pull out particular, you know, phytochemicals, like how we have the curcumin from turmeric. It's all from food that we're able to extract all these ingredients that, you know, from the medicines that keep us well. So if we can learn how to eat food the way God created them, in the right quantities and in the right portions and the variety, there's no reason why we can't be well in ourselves. And so for me, using food as medicine and turning into nutrition science was just, for me, that was just the way to go. And so that's why I became a nutritionist.
Absolutely. You just mentioned portions. So there's a lot of people, and I especially find within our community, right, African American community, a lot of people tend to overeat. And so I know that's something that you specifically help women with, overeating. Can you share with us some tips and advice and kind of like the mindset behind why you think people tend to overeat and why it seems so easy, just like, you know, just don't think, you know, in terms of portion sizes, just don't put that much on your plate. But even if people don't put that much on their plate, they can still go back and continue to go back and they don't get, you know, as full as other people. So can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit for us?
Okay. So I think that when it comes to overeating again, it comes down to the three pillars that I mentioned before. So your habits, your mindset, and having somebody that you're accountable to. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, it comes down to discovering what the underlying causes of undereating are. So is it stress? Is it an event in the past that hasn't been dealt with? Is it low self-esteem? Or is it just poor habits that spiraled out of control? So once again, like, we need to attack all four issues so that overeating can become something that you can deal with. Usually, I think when people overeat, it's because of an underlying problem. And that's first of all, that's the main thing that we need to tackle before we start trying to do anything about changing your habits or changing your mindset or any of those other things. So once we can figure that out, then we can now start to think of a plan that can help that particular person. Because for everybody, overeating or binge eating disorder, it has different causes and there are different things that spark it. So there's just not one general advice that I can give to say, okay, these are the tips to stop overeating, because I don't know what's triggering it for that particular person. Mm-hmm. So once we can figure that out and deal with that, then we can start to work on the different dietary changes or every other thing that you can do to help you overcome overeating. So that's my tip.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, because it's almost like a kind of like a Pandora's box. You got to keep uncovering that stuff, you know, keep coming out to really dig. And I think here, I'll say, I know here in America, we're essentially focused on like the treatment, but not more on how to prevent, you know, here we medicate, like you said earlier, we medicate everything, like, you know, oh, you're not doing this, here, take this, you know, instead of going to the doctor. And I think, like you said earlier, I think you said Dr. Google syndrome. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten on Google if I'm not feeling well and diagnosed myself just reading off of WebMD or the CDC or whatever, and I'm like, oh God, I have this, you know, and I don't know anything. I'm just like freaking out and thinking like, oh, they said that you should, like, you know, take this. So I'm just thinking, let me just take it and go with it and not really trying to understand the root. And I think that's why it's so key, if anybody's watching, really, you know, for those who are watching, is what I meant to say, for those who are watching, you know, to really take your advice on figuring out what it is that's triggering us and causing us to, you know, overeat or even undereat. And I feel like that within itself, because like you said, if it's something like, if it's maybe a mental health issue or people, I don't know, are abused or stressed or whatever it is, you know, that's a whole other avenue that people will need to focus on and go from there. So that can be just like, ooh, really, really hard. Now, I know you do have a wellness journal that people can use. So can you share with us a little bit about your journal and how it can help people in terms of setting their goals and going forward from there?
Okay, so the wellness journal is just basically, it's a daily log book that helps you to track your food, your drink, your physical activity, your sleep, your weight if you're trying to lose weight. So if you're trying to change your eating habits, or you're trying to figure out, you know, the reasons why you're not feeling 100% in yourself, it's just a good way for you to keep a track record of what you do on a daily basis. And then if there are anything, things that jump out to you, so for example, you might find after tracking your sleep for like a few days that you're only getting about 3 or 4 hours of sleep, that could explain why you're probably feeling tired or you have brain fog. If you track your food, you might see that you're probably having too much of something, maybe you're having too many treats, maybe you're not eating enough vegetables, you know, maybe you're not drinking enough water. You can get that sort of information from there. And also, if you're trying to lose weight, for example, you can see weeks where you've eaten really well and what results, you know, that has come about of that, and weeks where you've probably not eaten so well and you haven't lost any weight at all. You can see dietary patterns and look for ways that you can fix it. And also, if you're not exercising enough as well, that will be there. It also has an affirmation for every single day. There's a positive message there to spur you on, to keep you on whatever journey it is that you're trying to achieve, and a place for you to write daily mantras as well to keep yourself motivated. So it's just a little companion to help you with health journey.
Yeah, I love that. And so for like, in terms of tracking food, because I know you just said that, there's a lot of people when they track food, they'll try to track like the calories or, you know, is there a certain way that people should track food? I guess what I'm asking is, by tracking food, is it essentially just writing down like every single thing you eat, or is it more so breaking it down into specific categories like, you like this food belongs to this category, if you ate counting how many sweets, or is it like tracking the calories? Like, can you kind of expand on that a little bit to make sure I'm understanding correctly?
Okay, so with my wellness journal, there's nothing about tracking calories in there. It's just tracking foods that you eat, because I think that for some people, tracking calories, even from I myself, talking from a personal perspective, tracking calories can be quite triggering and can make you feel like you're on a diet. The point of the journal is not to track calories, it's to track the types of foods that you're eating.
Okay.
So when you look at the foods, like, can you see that you've eaten lots of vegetables? Can you see that you've had enough fruit? You've eaten enough whole grains. So are you eating all the right food groups in the correct portions, or are you eating too many sweets in the day or in the week? Or, you know, it's just to give you a general idea of what you're eating. And then where you see that you're not having enough of one food group, you have the opportunity to make changes. And, you know, and yet, in the book, so after each week, there's the review section where you can check, how satisfied was I with the way I ate this week? Did I get enough exercise? Did I get enough sleep? And then you can decide, you can track what you did well and what you didn't do so well, and you can set goals for the next week. So this comes to where I said about setting small goals. So each week you can set yourself another task. So maybe this week you realize that you didn't eat so many vegetables. So your goal for the next week will be, I will try to eat more vegetables. And that's something that you work on actively throughout the week. So that's why the journal is there. It's just as a means to help you stay on top of habits that you're trying to form and to ensure staying on track with them.
Okay, now I have a better understanding. Thank you for clarifying that. So for you, as long as you've been doing this as a nutritionist and a registered dietitian, like, what's been the biggest reward for you thus far, like ever since you began your career?
Honestly, it's seeing the smiles on people's faces when they've accomplished their goal, or when they're working towards something and they can see results. The joy is what keeps me going. I know that for some people, especially in this age where people like to produce courses that people can mass buy so that they can earn a lot of money and they don't want to do the one-to-one thing. For me, the one-to-one thing is the best part of my job, because there's just nothing better than the human interaction and actually seeing, like, when somebody's feeling low and just you saying a few words, the way it lifts them up and the smile they have on their faces, or at the end of my 12-week program when they've got to where they want to be, or they're so close and they know that they couldn't have come this far if they hadn't had the support. It's just, I think that's just the best thing for me. It's just seeing people winning. It makes me so happy, and I just want to, you know, get drunk off of that and keep repeating those again. So
yeah, I love that. Drunk off of that feeling of joy of helping people. I love that, right? If only more people in the world would choose to get drunk off of that and alcohol and all the other stuff that is out there. I do love that. So, but so for you, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now, where do you see yourself? Do you still see yourself doing this? Do you have any other avenues that you want to dive into, or what are your hopes and visions for the future?
Absolutely. To me, my goal is just to help as many ladies or anyone who wants my help accessible. My goal is just to see that the prevalence of diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol in the Black community is as low as possible. I just want to see our community thriving. I want to see our children growing up to be successful people. And you can only achieve that when you impact women, you impact children as well, because we're the ones who are the main sharers. So I feel that if I can impact as many women as possible, that would lead to me impacting as many children and more generations and generations as possible. So yes, I absolutely see myself doing this in the next 15 years. This makes me happy. It brings me so much joy. I cannot explain how much joy it brings me to see people winning. So, you know, if at all, maybe expand my empire to help more people. But I absolutely see myself doing this until the Lord calls me back home.
I love that, honestly, and I can feel your passion. Like, it's just like coming out of me. I can feel it so strongly. So for people who maybe can answer this question I have about diabetes, because there's a lot of people who are pre-diabetic, and please correct me if I'm wrong. And I've heard that if you're pre-diabetic, if you change your eating habits, you can end up not having, you know, it won't develop into diabetes. Is that correct, number one?
That's absolutely true, yes.
That is true. Okay, so for people who are pre-diabetic and maybe, you know, they went to the doctor, they just found that out, and they're feeling like, you know, it's the end of the world, they're on the road. Like, what is the very first thing that they should do? Like, after discovering that they are, and if they have hope to, you know, flip that around, and so that they don't end up, so that it doesn't fully develop into full-blown diabetes, what's the first, like, few steps you would say that that person should take? Because I know a lot of people kind of think that, you know, since they're pre-diabetic, it's just, you know, it's just inevitable, when really I've heard before that it's not, and that people can do something about it, but that doesn't always happen.
Okay, so before I answer your question, I also want to add that even people who have been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes can put it into remission and or reverse it, okay? So a diabetes diagnosis doesn't mean that you have to live with diabetes for the rest of your life. It doesn't mean that you have to go on metformin or take any medication. It is reversible or can be put into remission as well. So when it comes to diabetes or pre-diabetes, I would say absolutely, the first step that you should do is to go and find yourself a registered dietitian nutritionist to help you with coming up with a plan that can put your condition into remission. Sometimes when you try to do these things yourself, one or two things happen. You could make all the right dietary changes and actually reverse it. Right. Or you could end up listening to lots of pseudoscientists online or on social media, and you start trying to do a whole load of things that you're not going to be able to maintain, and all you do is you just make your condition spiral out of control because you're hopping off and on diets, and you're just making the condition worse. So get yourself a registered professional that can put you on a plan or develop a plan that's going to help you. And, you know, you will have the accountability as well. They will help you make small changes, even if you can't overhaul your whole diet all at once. Some people think that they can, but once they actually start it, it's overwhelming after the first week. And what do? Oh, I've tried so hard, and I'm just going to reward myself with a donut. And where does that lead to? Spirals out of control. So go to somebody who's going to give you the whole accountability, who's going to develop a plan and ensure that you put the condition in remission and, you know, get it out of the way. And like, if you do something that's going to be a proper plan that teaches you how to eat, you wouldn't have to feel that you're doing it just to get rid of the diabetes. You're going to end up changing your eating habits for the rest of your life so that the diabetes doesn't come back and you kill two birds with one stone. So I think the only advice I can say is just go to a registered professional to help you.
Okay. Yes. If you're listening, we're going to keep saying it. Get yourself a nutritionist and a registered dietitian like you would a personal trainer, a coach, everything else. Like I said, exactly. I just wish people would really put their health, and wellness first. I know there's a lot that goes into it because depending on who where people grow up, then, the best food isn't always, in the areas or where they're staying. So they have a lot of access to processed food that, there's that whole thing, and that's a whole nother, avenue within itself. But over here, at least in the U.S., it's just super expensive, and a lot of people don't want to pay, to go see a nutritionist or the doctor, and they're feeling like, I can't afford it right now. So then they put their health, on the back burner for there. But for you, I just want you, if you could just like, after, out of everything you said, because you said so many great, incredible things that people need to know and hear, but if you could narrow it down to the biggest takeaway from people who are tuning in right now watching your interview, what do you want them to take away when they listen to this interview? What is the one thing you want people to understand about nutrition and health in general?
Okay, so I think that one of the main things I would like to say is that we need to make our health a priority, okay? Mm-hmm. So many of us tend to focus on wanting to buy the latest iPhone or doing the BBL surgery or whatever that crazy is. or doing liposuction or paying for things that literally they don't do anything for our health. Mm. When you have your health, when you don't have health, you have nothing. You can't enjoy any of all those luxuries that you've invested in. So while you might sit down there and thinking, oh, it's far too expensive for me to invest in a nutritionist, it's far too expensive for me to invest in your health, you might not want to pay for it now, but when you fall sick, you're probably going to spend 10 times the amount trying to fix something that you could have easily fixed with a quarter or a fraction of the amount that you're going to spend to make you feel better. When it comes to nutrition, you need to make sure that whoever you're following on Instagram or what internet pages you're reading,
right,
they cannot verify that the articles are being written by a professional, or that the accounts you're following are not being run by a professional. You need to get out of there, regardless of what that influencer or person is. No matter how professional they look to you, if they have no recognized qualifications, you have no business listening to them for advice. So make sure you know where your information is coming from. Make your health a priority. And once you decide to do all of those things, take baby steps. There's no need to try and do everything at once and get overwhelmed and set realistic goals. Weight loss, it took some time for you to put on the weight. It's going to take some time for you to get it off as well. Patience is a virtue. So do everything in moderation and changes will come at the time. And if you're struggling to do it on your own, some of us professionals, we are more than happy. I'm more than happy to help you. So,
absolutely.
Come to us.
Yes. You. So I know you're in London, but for people here, do you offer some kind of way where, they're watching and they're like, I know I can't physically necessarily go, but they can, you can do coaching online. Can you share with us like where they can find you, follow you, all of that good stuff?
Yes. So I'm on Instagram and my handle is Dr. Somi Bennett. My website, my name, www.somiigbennett.com. It's everything is my name, so you can find me that way. You can email me. It's hello@somiigbennett.com. I see clients from all over the world, practically in Germany, US, Canada. COVID has made everything virtual for now, so I do I do have clients from everywhere, and I know there's a whole time difference factor, but I'm quite flexible. I'm able to tailor my services to, you know, to wherever people are. So having this discussion now, it's actually 10 past here, but I would normally sometimes be seeing clients at this time. We just have to agree on at a time that's mutually convenient. But yes, I'm happy to work with you. No matter what I said, my mission is to help every woman, but particularly as many women of color as want my services. They are my main priority, because COVID has just shown just how susceptible we are to, to all, you know, we tend to suffer the most, and that's not just in the US. It's also in the UK. It's all over the world, really. So my mission is to get our health back. And
Absolutely. Have you found yourself busier since COVID, or did it slow down? I know in different industries, a lot of people said COVID took a really harder hit. Did you find yourself getting more clients as of it? How has it been with COVID, trying to, you know, continue this?
Yes, so a lot of people are very interested in their health now. They now realize how important it is to make it a priority. Obviously, some people still have a little bit of barriers. They're worried about the cost, the investment, but some people are willing to pay whatever is necessary just to make sure that they have their health, because they know without their health, they have nothing. So it's been a mix, but then I still try to work at a level that I can offer something. I might not be able to offer you my full package, for example, but I can always provide some service so that you can take away something and start working where you're at. And when you're able to... intensive, and as it's a lot of commitment on my part, and so I expect that whoever is going to take on the full package is going to be just as committed. If you're not, then it's kind of a waste of my time. Somebody else benefited from that, you know, from that. So yeah,
absolutely. No, I agree absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. You were absolutely phenomenal. You were incredible. You gave us so much good information, and I love your takeaways about making health a priority, you know, taking smaller steps and not just, you know, punishing yourself. And just, if anything, anyone, if you're on a diet right now, so the next time I hear somebody say like, oh, I'm going to try this diet, I'm just gonna, like, it's not worth it. Tell them to check out this interview. As long as after watching this interview, it'll change your mind on that. So thank you so much. I enjoyed you again. Thank you for taking time out of your day. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you. I really appreciate it too. And it's been fun. I've enjoyed myself. So thank you.
It's been fun. We've been laughing. We've been having, you know, talking about serious topics and conversations. So it's great. And I definitely know people will be having questions for you after the show, and hopefully reach out to you and all of that good stuff. So thank you again. And I will keep connecting. Yeah, I will keep in contact with you, and we'll connect again. And I'd love to have you back on the show.
Oh, sure. I would love to come on back to the show.
Alrighty, you guys. Hi, how is everyone? I had to show that interview again because I just thought it was so good. Dr. Somi, she just, oh my gosh, if you're just now tuning in, you got to go back and watch the interview because she just gave us so much incredible, important information that we need to know in terms of our health and fitness journey. There's the three main takeaways that I just have to repeat. Like she said, it's all about habits, having someone to help you be accountable, and then the mindset were the big three. So again, if you're just now tuning in and you're watching, this is the Jared Nicole Show every Tuesdays from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And we just had Dr. Somi from London all the way from the UK come on and share with us why prioritizing your health is extremely important. And if you don't have your wealth, if we don't have our health, you guys, we have nothing. Our health is our wealth. And like I said, if all of this work that we're doing, these 9 to 5, these, who knows, 9 to 10s, whatever you're working, we're making all this money. If you're trying to take a vacation or a trip or just do something, all of these luxuries, you won't be able to enjoy it down the line, right? Because if you don't have your health, you're going to be spending so much money trying to I don't want to say fix yourself, but try to, you know, get better. You might find yourself in the hospital spending just countless and countless of dollars on medication and all of that jazz. So I just want to encourage you guys to please prioritize your health and make sure that, you know, if you're struggling, consider getting a nutritionist or a registered dietitian. Like I said earlier in the show, we will get a lifestyle coach, we will get a business coach, we'll get purses and bags and clothes, we'll get everything else that we really don't need, that's not really essential, before we want to spend money investing in our health. And I know that's because it's not always right, expense. I mean, it's not always cheap. It's pretty expensive at times. But if we do learn to prioritize our health and take care of ourselves, eat the right things, at least exercise, you know, maybe 3 or 4 times a week, just doing those things, it won't be such a burden, you know, down the line. Because we all know eventually when we get in our golden years and we're older and we're entering into retirement, we want to be able to enjoy it. We don't want to be miserable, you know, at home, constantly sick, all of that stuff. So I just want to really reiterate that to you guys. But no, I'm super excited because we have our second guest of today, Miss Naja Jones, who I'm going to bring on shortly. And she's got a very, very powerful, touching and inspiring story. But before I bring her on, I do want to read off some statistics and tips. So today she's going to come on. She's a fitness trainer and entrepreneur, but she also has an inspiring and touching story about overcoming domestic violence, which is a very, 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 very serious topic and conversation that people should not take lightly. So again, before I bring her on, I did want to go ahead and read some statistics to you guys, and then we'll take a break and bring her back on. So for those of you, if you know anyone, if you think you know anyone who is in an abusive relationship, please encourage them. Don't just be there for them, but encourage them to get help. I know a lot of the times when it comes to domestic violence, a lot of times people just think, you know, the easiest thing for them is to just, you know, why don't they just leave automatically? But it's so much deeper than that. And I know Naja's going to come on and talk to us about that. But here are some important statistics and facts about domestic violence that you guys should know. And I think the entire world should know, honestly. So on average, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. And just in 1 year, this equates to more than 10 million women and men in just 1 year. That's a lot, you guys. And then 1 in 4 women and 1 in 9 men experience severe intimate partner physical violence and or intimate partner contact sexual violence or stalking. So this is serious. And I know a lot of times people think domestic violence is just something that happens with women, primarily a lot of people forget that there are men who also can be victims of domestic abuse. And then let me scroll down here. Alrighty. And then on a typical day, there are more than 20,000 phone calls that are placed to domestic violence hotlines nationwide. So if you're watching this and if you're going through this, I just, again, want to stress and encourage you all to get help. And then a couple of more statistics. So the presence of a gun in a domestic violence situation increases the risk of homicide by 500%. Jeez. Intimate partner violence accounts for 15% of all violent crimes, and then women between the ages of 18 to 24 are the most commonly abused by an intimate partner. 90% of domestic violence involves a weapon. Domestic victimization is correlated with a higher rate of depression and suicidal behavior, and then only 34% of people who are injured by intimate partners receive medical care for their injuries. So these are some jaw-dropping statistics that I wanted to share with you guys to just kind of set the tone before Naja comes on. So again, if you're just now tuning in, this is the Jaira Nicole Show every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. We're going to take a quick break, but don't go away because I'm going to bring on my second guest of the day, Miss Naja Jones. So stay tuned and we will be right back. Alrighty, you guys, this thing is covering my face, but anyways, alrighty, you guys, and we're back. This is the Jaira Nicole Show every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. For those of you who are just now tuning in, we are going to go ahead and bring on our second guest today, Ms. Naja Jones, so I'm going to get ready and add her to the stream. Hello!
Hey, how are you?
How are you? Long time no see.
Yes, definitely.
But I'm super excited to have you on. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Just to give everybody a little background on me and Miss Naja's history. She was my boxing trainer, and she was definitely giving me a workout at 5 in the morning. So, oh man, yeah. So she's a phenomenal trainer, boxing trainer, and COVID, of course, like everything else got in the way and stuff like that. But I do miss being in the ring and stuff, and hopefully we'll get back to that. But I did want to just go ahead and start off by letting you introduce yourself to everybody, and then we'll get right into the conversation from there.
Okay, so hey everyone, my name is Naja. I go by Naj just for short. As she said, I was her boxing coach. That was one of the many things that I did. I aspired to be in entrepreneurship in different, aspects as far as boxing. I have my own t-shirt business. This is actually one of the t-shirts that I made.
Oh.
And I'm definitely a big advocate for our community and just bettering our community as a whole.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that was one of, I've seen some of the stuff, but I didn't know that was one of the t-shirts. I got to get one. Definitely got to get one. But yeah, like I said, so great to have you on the show. I know it's kind of going to start off kind of light as we talk about, you know, you and the health and fitness, and it's going to get a little, you know, heavy for the latter half of the interview. So just to start off, what kind of inspired you and led you to get in the fitness industry and specifically boxing? What kind of piqued your interest?
God. So as a kid, I was a tomboy growing up. I played all kinds of sports. So just me loving sports in general kind of started as a child.
Gotcha.
But boxing in particular, I got introduced to boxing through an ex-boyfriend. He used to box, so he took me to the boxing gym, and that's when I, you know, first started to learn. And so from there, I just fell in love with the sport and started learning more about it, and eventually became a coach for it.
Right, absolutely. So I know when it comes to boxing, did you, whenever like you would talk to people, maybe meet random people or just family and friends, when you said you did boxing, would they kind of give you a look like, really? Like, because
yes,
I know it feels
very much
whole...
so. They were like, boxing? Like, why are you doing boxing? They thought I was really out fighting people. They were like, you're going to mess up your face. I'm like, no, it's not that complicated. It's just a style of working out that, you know, has so many benefits. And I had to explain it to them, like, you can box. Grandma, you can box. Come on. Like, I see old women. I can tell. Yes. Everybody can do it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because I'm just thinking back to me. And whenever I told people, you know, I was like, yeah, my boxing trainer, they're like, what? Gyra, wait, what? You out of all people? Because, you know, they see me growing up doing ballet, tap, you know,
right. Gymnastics,
cheerleading, all that stuff. So they're like, you doing boxing? And I just feel like there's this narrative behind it that, like, women can't do boxing, and especially if you're like a girly girl, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. You can't. And then I also think too, seeing women of color too, you know, who look like you and I in boxing in general, because that's actually what attracted me to you at first, because it was like, oh my God, somebody who looks like me, who's, you know, young like me, she's doing this. And I was like watching your videos and I felt so inspired and intrigued. And I was like, I'm going to reach out to her. And I sure did reach out to you. And then the rest was
yes,
history.
Yes, here we are now.
Right.
Yes.
So for you as a boxer, what is the mindset that it takes for boxing? Even let's not even do competitively, right? But just in general, because like you said earlier, boxing, you don't always have to compete. I think a lot of people, maybe that's where the you're going to mess up your face comments and things like that came from, right? But people don't realize boxing is like a full body workout. So, but behind that, when you're in the ring, what's the mindset that a boxer has to basically have?
So I would describe the mindset as having calmness in a chaotic situation. So it's very more than just, you know, having physical abilities, but you have to take your mind to somewhere that is peaceful, you know, because you're in this chaotic environment. If your mind is chaotic, then things are going to go downhill.
Right.
But if you're able to lock in and focus and be disciplined and just control your mindset, that's something like just in boxing ring itself, but that is something that, you know, will follow you on your path of life in general. So whenever you're in a chaotic situation, you'll think back to boxing and go, okay, if I can do it in the ring, you know, I can calm myself down in this particular situation and move forward. So that is definitely the mindset anybody who boxes or does anything competitive needs to have.
I love that, because like you said, you can just relate that to life in this past, I mean, this year and then last year, you know, with COVID, like
exactly. Everything
was chaotic, right? But
we
weren't staying calm, that's for sure.
No.
People were freaking out. Exactly. We were freaking out, losing our minds, going left to right, like what? But I just think that's a good being calm and like keeping calm and a category. I just think that's a good, like, I guess a motto or way of, you know, a way, what I'm saying, a quote like that you can just think of in terms of dealing with life. I love that you said that. So for you, have you met a lot of other women boxers, or even have you seen a lot of young girls doing boxing? Is that something you would want, I know you're a mother, your daughters to pick up? Have you thought about that?
Yes, that's something I'll definitely train both of my little girls to do. Me and my seven-year-old have already started. Yeah, so she loves it. And then, you know, I have a baby 18 months, so we'll definitely get her started. But I don't see a lot of women in boxing, women like you and me, just your regular, everyday
right.
women who are able to box. So that is something that I do want to start in the future with my plans to start, you know, like a women's team and teach them that, you know, this is also self-defense. This is, you know, stress relief, just giving the overall benefits, you know, of boxing.
Absolutely. I love what you said about that. Because like I said, you especially even as when we're young, right, and kids are about to be in kindergarten, parents are already thinking, I want my daughter to be a cheerleader, or I want my daughter to play soccer. I want my son to play football, basketball. But rarely do you hear boxing, you know, kind of come up as this is what I want my children to do. And I know a lot of times, like you said, I think it's people thinking like, okay, I don't want my child like going to school bruised up, you know, on the face, or they might think it's too much for like children. But I see little girls on Instagram like killing it, literally in different countries here in the U.S., like so quick and moving. And I think it's really key and important for people to not just look at boxing as something where you have to compete and fight, but it can be a full body workout. So can you share with us a little bit about some of the benefits or certain parts of the body, like from that you found when you were boxing that kind of helped you? Like
most definitely. So like you said, boxing is full body. Like it doesn't look like it. Most people think boxing is just with the arms, but no. I remember my first boxing class, because I've always worked out, so I was already, you know, when I started boxing. I was just a little overweight from having kids. But I remember after my first, you know, one-hour session, the next day, my back was sore, my abs were sore, my legs were sore, and all I did was, you know, punch a bag. So I was like, oh, wow, this is very beneficial for me physically, because that was something that I was thinking was a high-intensity workout, but that's something that just wasn't as simple as running or sprinting, you know, something, you know, more fun, I guess you could say. And then as I started to pursue it more and more, that's when I noticed the other benefits of it, such as the stress relief. Like when we did that session for me and you, how you would go calm, and then I would tell you, okay, punch it really hard, release your frustration.
Right.
And you know, that's how we ended our session, and you left feeling like, oh, wow, like today's going to be a good day. Like it's very beneficial, and it also helps with depression, and it also fights dementia. Like it's so beneficial. It has more non-physical benefits than physical benefits, and that's where I think the misconception is. People just see it as, oh, you're promoting violence, when really you are doing the opposite. You are training your kids how to be disciplined, especially during chaos.
Right, absolutely. So let's kind of segue into, because I know boxing and then violence, and then we're kind of going to talk here about domestic violence. So I did want to just kind of, in the beginning, for viewers, because they don't know, if you can kind of share your story, and then I'll ask you the questions from there. So just kind of starting off, the biggest question I know most people have, if they're on the outside looking in, family and friends, when they start suspecting, right, a loved one is in an abusive relationship, they don't know what to do. You know, there's times where people, they mean well, and they're kind of like, Naj, get out, like, you know, don't talk to them, blah, blah, but it's much deeper, and it's harder than that to just say, you know, get out, leave. And oftentimes people, you know, the family members get upset and frustrated because they don't know why the person is staying and things like that. So I just kind of wanted to let you kind of guide the conversation in the beginning with your story, and then we'll go and answer those questions that I just mentioned.
Gotcha. Okay, so just a background to as of why we're even talking about boxing and abusive relationships.
Right.
So my ex-boyfriend, who, I was in an abusive relationship with him, he was actually a professional fighter. So we actually met at the gym. So we had that in common, was, an interest in boxing, and he pursued that, professionally. So that's how the relationship started, and that's how the bond started. Now, yes, everybody was telling me to get out and to leave. And, for someone who has a loved one or a friend that is in an abusive situation and you keep telling them to leave, telling them that person is terrible, to be honest, the more you push a person to leave, the more they're going to find a reason to stay. Mm-hmm. And if you start to see that behavior, which is what happened to me, it came in between the relationship between me and my family, me and my mom, we stopped talking for a while. Because I was in this relationship and she did not approve of it at all. And young and naive, I fought her, because what people don't understand is that there's things going on inside the home that those outside people are unaware of. So it's like I see the good side in him too. Mm-hmm. And that was the side that I only chose to focus on. So it's like, although people are telling me that he's bad and I need to leave, that just really pushed me to stay more. Mm-hmm. What my mom did for me, honestly, was she prayed for me every night, and I did not know. My mom prayed for me. My mm-hmm. sister prayed for me. So I strongly believe in the power of prayer.
Right.
So if someone come out of that relationship, ooh, pray for them. Pray for them.
Mm-hmm. My gosh. I just can't even imagine. I think what you said was really key, how people, when they're in abusive relationships, they see all sides of their abuser, essentially. Like you said, he, I mean, I don't know exactly what he, said or did, but just to give maybe kind of like a general example, not to speak on, I don't want anybody to think I'm speaking right, on behalf of people who are survivors, but just, like you said, maybe he had an outburst or something like that, but then maybe the next day he takes you to dinner and buys you flowers and is really affectionate and really sweet. And then, maybe things are good for that rest of the week. Then the next week something happens and triggers him. And it's a cycle. And like you said, people do want to believe in the good of that person, I think, right? Even outside of relationships, I just think in general, we have a hard time when there's people that we love, we give them another chance and another chance and another chance and overlook all of those things because we simply love them and we care about them. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, they also didn't want to, and please, I would love for you to chime in on this. They also didn't want to leave their abuser because they felt like their abuser didn't have anybody or their abuser were broken. So if they left them, they would be abandoning them and then the abuser wouldn't get the help that they need. Was that something?
Honestly, that is how we even got into a relationship. He was in a place to where he needed transportation to, go to practice for his fights. He had dreams and aspirations of being, successful in the MMA. And then, I saw potential in him. I saw his drive and determination. And so me being the person I am, I just really wanted to offer a helping hand. And so I knew he really didn't have family here, anybody. So I felt like if I left him, then it would destroy him. But I was disregarding the fact that by staying, I'm destroying myself.
Mm.
And so once that came across, I had to decide, are you going to take care of yourself and your kids? Or are you going to keep putting your energy into this man? Mm.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So for you, what is that? What was that breakthrough moment? Was it one moment? Was it a series of moments that made you just kind of say, enough is enough, I have to get out? What kind of changed for you? And like you said, you just said you realized, you and your kids, or are you going to continue to put energy? But did something specific kind of happen to make you be like, I can't keep doing this?
Most definitely. So as you know, I did have his baby. I ended up getting pregnant with him.
Right.
Throughout my pregnancy, it was still, you know, pretty much the same. And just for the record, what I also wanted to say as far as, you know, me being a side in an abusive relationship, I don't want people to think that he was physically abusive all the time, because he wasn't. There was really only one physical incident that involved me calling the police. But the majority of the abuse did come from mental abuse, you know, sexual abuse, and, you know, financial abuse. And those are the types of abuses that get ignored the most, because they're not often looked at as abuse. So that was the majority of the kind of abuse I was experiencing. When it became physical, that's when I had, you know, that's when I said enough of my life is in jeopardy. That's what made me open my eyes. And there was an incident where I was 6 months pregnant, and we got into an altercation. We were already broken up at the time, but still living together. He ended up shoving me a couple of times, and I ended up falling onto my stomach, and my placenta ruptured. And so later that morning, you know, I ended up calling the police. I left, went to stay with my parents. I ended up going to the hospital later that morning, because it happened at 2 o'clock in the morning. Went home, got some rest, went to the hospital at 10 o'clock in the morning, because and discomfort. Long story short, I ended up having an emergency C-section that night because my placenta had ruptured from me falling onto my stomach. And they said had I came in, you know, the next day, me or the baby probably would not be here, because I had lost so much blood. I was 10 milliliters away from going into a hemorrhage. So I was very thankful to have, you know, gone to the hospital. Through a friend's direction, actually. I went to go visit a friend. I have entrepreneurship friends. Mm-hmm. I was going to go pick up some t-shirts, and he really encouraged me, you know, yo fam, go get checked out, just for the record. So I did, because I was just, you know, feeling discomfort, not necessarily, you know, pain.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, I'll go get checked out, just, you know, just to say I went checked out and just to put it on the record, and that's when I found out my situation was a lot worse than what I had perceived, which was also like a metaphor for the entire relationship that I was in. You know, I was in a lot deeper, you know, a lot more trouble than I had thought.
Right.
So once I have not seen, spoken to him, you know, since that day. You know, that was November 24th of 2019. So ever since that day, ever since I, you know, gave birth to, you know, a healthy baby, at 25 weeks, you know, I have not been in that situation. That is what, you know, essentially forced me out, because, you know, he ended up fleeing, you know, running, because he knew he had messed up.
Right.
So I was really kind of taken out of that situation by the grace of God.
Right.
So that is what pulled me out, and I've been thriving ever since.
Wow. I'm so happy to know that you're okay. I'm so happy that your friend pushed you and was like, no, you need to go get checked out. Yeah, because like you said, I can't imagine. Thank God you're here with us today. And I just wonder, and I know viewers are probably curious, you know, if there's anybody in this situation and, you know, they do have a child with their abuser, you know, how can they stay? Because I can only imagine, obviously it's not easy, right? Trying to raise your daughter, and like you said, you haven't seen or spoken to him since that incident. And I know it's going to probably be a really hard conversation as she gets, you know, as she gets older and, you know, wants to know, or if he, I don't know if he's tried to even reach out to you or apologize or things since then, but wow, gosh. That's devastating. What do you kind of do to keep yourself upbeat and just, you know, motivated, encouraged? I know you said you've been thriving ever since, but what has it like taken? What did your journey to healing look like, essentially?
Wow, it was a long journey. It was hard. But one of the most important things what I began to get closer with God and into my relationship mm-hmm. with him. And I started to, you know, see the purpose of that situation and what it has done for me. Mm-hmm. And as far as, like, me healing and stuff like that, like, I have forgiven him. I forgave him a long time ago.
Wow.
I'm not angry with him. I don't hold anything against him. I want to see him succeed, you know. I don't want to paint this picture of him as, you know, this terrible person.
Right.
Because, you know, in all honesty, he's not. He's not a terrible person. He's just a terrible person to date. He's terrible with women. He's kind to everybody else. But if you are dating him, you're going to see his worst side, basically. Mm-hmm. If you are in an intimate relationship with him, you're going to see his worst. If you are not, you're going to see his best sides. And mm-hmm. I call both. So I don't want people to take away that, oh, he's, you know, just terrible, terrible person, because I honestly, deep in my heart, did not feel that way. I think he's, you know, terrible today. And as far as, you know, explaining this to my daughter as she gets older, because I know she's going to ask those questions,
right.
I'm just going to have to be extremely honest with her. I'm going to explain to her who he is, why he hasn't reached out, and if she wants the opportunity to reach out, you know, I may end up helping her in that situation, because he does have other kids, and
okay.
and you know he does try, you know, with them. He has not tried with me or with her. Has not asked about her or has not seen her.
Wow.
Nothing. But like I said, I don't want to hold anything out against him. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what God has in store for him. So if it does come so that he can be a part of her life, I won't stand in the way.
Right, absolutely. And I think it's so, like, courageous of you to even do that, because I can't imagine, you know, people who feel like they can't get over what happened to them, right? And I'm saying, and I've never been through that, so I can't say. I know healing looks different for everybody, right? There's a lot of times there's people, they want to forgive, right? But they just can't get past what the person has done to them. So for you, in terms of forgiveness, I know you said you got closer to God, but how, if there's anybody who went through an abusive relationship right now, or is a domestic violence survivor, and they're struggling with forgiveness, what would you say to them? How would you encourage them to just really let it, you know, not necessarily forget, right, completely what happened, but to be able to forgive that person and fully let them go? Because I can only imagine for you, it probably was kind of freeing when you did get to that point.
Yes.
To like kind of relinquish all of that. So what would you say to anyone struggling who maybe they've been out of the relationship for like years now, but they still, you know, hate that person's gut, or maybe the person, their abuser, maybe they don't feel bad for them, right? Maybe they don't feel sorry. Maybe they're still, you know, unfortunately abusing other people or don't care, but what would you say?
So yeah, definitely anybody who is struggling with, you know, anybody who did them wrong, not just an abuser, anybody who did you wrong in general, you know, think about it like this. When you hold on to that anger and, you know, and to that bitterness, you know, think of it as extra weight. You are carrying extra weight that is holding you back, that you have the ability to just toss that weight off of you and live your life freely. But it's like you're trying to move forward into life, and you can't understand, you know, why things aren't happening for you the way you think they should. It's because you have this trail of weight that is pulling you back while you are trying to go forward. So I didn't forgive him for him. I didn't reach out to him and say, look, I forgive you. Things are, you know, kumbaya. No, I looked into the mirror and I said, you know what? I forgive him. You know, I forgive him. I'm going to move on. I'm going to know my worth. I'm going to look at this situation as a lesson and take what I have learned and take what it has taught me and take the good part of that and leave the bad and take the good parts with me and, you know, build my empire with. But I think some people are trying to hold on to that bitterness and wondering why they can't, you know, thrive and persist in life. And that is the reason why. So definitely, you really just have to let go and look at the situation as, okay, what did you learn? For me, that situation really helped me with the foundation of who I am as a woman. I'm not the same little girl I was when I was with him. But, you know, the foundation that I have as a woman, the confidence that I have, you know, I now know my worth. I know what I want in a man.
Right.
So right off the bat, I know not to. It taught me a lot. It gave me a lot of qualities that I did not have as a little girl. So I could, like, I'm not that same girl. If you knew me back then, you don't know me now. So you really just have to really look at the situation and ask yourself, what did I learn? What did this do for me?
Mm.
And focus on that and take that with you and leave that dead weight behind.
Mm. Wow. That's, oh my gosh, that's so inspiring. And just,
yeah, that's the
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, that for sure. In terms, because like you said, taking the focus off of that person, like you said, it doesn't even have to be someone in an abusive relationship, but the focus off of that person and their actions and bringing it towards you. And now, like you said, you're thriving, you're confident, you know your worth, all of that stuff. And we can feel it. I can feel it for sure. For someone, because like I said, for someone who's not, who's never experienced or been in an abusive relationship or on the outside looking in, a lot of times when you guys mention survivors or victims will mention there were red flags that I ignored, or there were certain personality traits that I ignored. Can you please elaborate and share with us some of those things where, you know, maybe they kind of were red flags to you, or you notice like, okay, maybe he's got a little bit of a temper, or, you know, or maybe he kind of has a tendency to like control, like what are some of those things that you can share with us? Because like you said, it wasn't just, you know, just physical, just, you know, hitting or pushing and stuff. You said there's mental, there was financial, there were others. So what does that look like? If you could give us like maybe concrete examples or kind of paint us a picture.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there were a lot of red flags in the beginning. A lot of red flags that I saw, and I was like, oh no, I'm colorblind. I can't see. But that's a lot of red flags. For example, like you said, the temper. So, you know, the temper was one of the first things that I had noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a switch to where it's like he's cool one day, and then it's like, I think he's just this completely different person. Like, he can turn it off and on. Just his background and his background in general, like, he, you know, was involved with a lot of drugs and,
mm-hmm.
and smoking and just hanging around those kind of people in that environment. So, you know, that was a red flag. My mom, she ran his background check. A bunch of red flags right there. You know, previous arrests, previous, you know, instances with the police. So, you know, I definitely knew, you know, what he was, you know. And then as far as how he was with women, and then very flirtatious, and he had a sex addiction. So that was a red flag that I had saw. He was very manipulative. So, and that is something that I also noticed, you know, early on. So I saw all the red flags, and that is another thing why I had to forgive him, was because forgiving him was for myself, because I saw the red flags way before I got pregnant. I saw the red flags before we moved in, and it's like I refused to acknowledge them and refused to leave. And so it's like I kind of had to look at myself and be like, okay, I am partly responsible for everything that I went through with him, because it's like I knew, you know, what I was getting myself into, but if I chose to ignore it, so I had to take some responsibility too. Another red flag that I think that women need to pay attention to is past relationships that he's been in, and the relationship that he has with his mother. If those relationships, you know, are very rocky, that, you know, that is a red flag that you need to investigate. Because if he can't, you know, have a good relationship with his mother, that kind of sets the tone for every woman that is going to enter into their life. And, you know, I had to really, really dig deep and say, I can't raise a man. You know, there were some things that did not get crossed off the list when he was a boy. And so, you know, those things are, you know, transferring on into his relationship with women. And I said, I don't have to be the recipient of that. I don't have to take it. I deserve better. You know, even though it's not, it's partially, you know, not his fault the way he is, But at the end of the day, it's like, although I can understand it, I don't have to accept it. So once I realize I don't have to accept it, is when I moved on and moved forward.
Wow. So what is it that you think, what is it that you want the world, just people in general, to understand about domestic abuse? Because I know I see it all the time on Facebook. Someone will, you know, post their story, and I see it actually a lot more from men will comment and be like, you know, I don't understand why women stay. I don't understand why they stay. The red flags are there. Just leave. Or they're like, if I would have known that, I would have like came and tried to beat him up. You know, just things like that. But what do you want people to understand and know, and you feel like it's kind of misconstrued?
So definitely the big question as far as to why do we stay. Honestly, as sometimes we don't even know because the perception is different. So what you guys are seeing is different from what I am seeing. So it's like when people are saying, why did you stay? Just like we talked about in the beginning, was because I was focused on those good qualities. Mm. You know, I fell in love with, you know, the potential that I saw in him, not who the man he was at that moment. But it's like I saw what he could be, you know. I was like, oh, well, if he only did this, then everything would be perfect. Trying to get him to do that one simple thing, you know, treat right, was, you know, a big hurdle that he could not get over. Right. And so it was like I continued to stay and give him chances, you know, hoping that he would get over, you know, and change, but it never happened.
Right.
And honestly, I really don't know why I stayed. It's a question I can't answer. Love is a strong emotion.
Right.
And so like when you like think about your child, when you have a child who is acting out and people are like, why don't you just kick them out the house? I can't, because that is my beloved child.
That's
I can't
right.
put my child on the street.
Right.
So, you know, me leading him felt like me, you know, putting someone I love onto the street, and it was just really hard for me to do that. And I took on that abuse for the sake of him.
Mm.
And I can't say it was the right decision. I can't say it was the wrong decision, but I can't say I stayed way too long.
Right.
I'm glad I got out. I stayed only a year. I talk to some people, they say, oh, I was in a abusive relationship for 7 years, for 10 years.
Right.
So I'm blessed to have gotten out in a year.
Right.
So definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, there's people who, you know, there's people who might be listening now who are, you know, in one, and it's been 15, 20, you know, 30 years, and they just don't have the courage to, I don't even know if I really want to say the courage to leave, because that can kind of be taken in a negative way, but just it's hard, and it's definitely a lot. And like you said, I think it makes it even harder when you do have the people obviously who know you and raised you, they're pushing you towards getting out, but really, like you mentioned earlier in the beginning, it only pushes you towards that person. I think people are more, you know, they become more protective of that person.
Yes.
And then I did want to highlight the fact is also too, you know, Naj, you're an adult. So it makes it even more challenging. You know, parents, if they have children who are teenagers, right, or in high school, you know, they can kind of, not all the time, but they can kind of, you know, tell them, you're not seeing him anymore. You know,
they can intervene.
They can
intervene. Yes, definitely.
But when your daughter, when your son, they're adults, you can preach to them all you want, but you can't force them out of an abusive or toxic, you know, relationship, friendship, whatever it is. A lot of the times you can't, and it makes it even more challenging. So one of the things I wanted to ask you is when you spoke about earlier about like the different types of abuse and relationships, the mental, financial abuse, especially financial abuse, because that stuck out to me, because I rarely really hear people when they say I'm a, you know, domestic abuse survivor talk about like the financial implications. So can you share a little bit of what you mean by financial abuse that you experienced?
Here's an example of, you know, financial abuse. And it starts with the root of manipulation, for one.
Okay.
So someone who's like me, who's very kind and giving, that's just me naturally. Okay, so he was very, very manipulative and fed off of that quality of me. So whenever we moved in together, for example, whenever we moved in, it was, you know, agreed that he would cover rent, I would cover the other stuff.
Okay.
But as time went on, it was like I was paying all of the bills. I was paying, you know, for everything. I had a car that we shared, you know. I was paying for the car. And it wasn't so like he was, like, forcing me to give him money, so to say. But it was like I was struggling financially because of his manipulation. Mm. And, you know, that is a form of abuse, because they are doing it intentionally. So, and even helping him with, you know, his career and stuff, you know, I would, you know, give him money for that. And so that really made me struggle, you know, financially, to where once I lost my job, that's when it really shed light on the situation. Mm. Because I was working a job to where I could handle, you know,
right.
I could handle that. I was, you know, making really good money. Well, I eventually ended up having to leave that job because of the abusive situation was causing so much anxiety and depression that I could not work.
Wow.
So I ended up having to quit because I was about to get fired. And once they really opened my eyes to see how he really doesn't contribute anything financially, and I'm in this big hole because
right.
I have, you know, that is what I consider financial abuse.
Right, absolutely. So in terms of the manipulation, was it kind of like outright, is it a situation where they're outright like, if you don't give me money for this or if you don't pay this, like, do they, like, was he threatening to leave you? What kind of, like, how did that happen?
No, he never really threatened to leave me. It was always like a, okay, like we made an agreement, so he knew that I wasn't going to, you know, get the place with him unless he agreed to pay, you know, the rent. So he was agreeing to do something that, you know, he wasn't going to do. And then inside of the relationship,
okay,
you know, he would say, okay, yeah, I'm going to pay you back, or, you know, yeah, I'm going to do. It was filled with empty promises that I was like, okay, I can count on him to do something, when in reality, he's just telling me what I want to hear so he can get that transaction, you know, at that particular moment, knowing he wasn't going to, you know, put anything back into it.
Mm.
Yeah, that was kind of the my situation for it.
Gotcha. I understand. So now, you know, it's been over a year, right?
Yes.
It's been a little bit over a year. Why do you feel like it's so important for you to speak out and share your story? Because I know there's a lot of times where people who are in abusive relationships, sometimes your close family and your friends, they won't even know it for years and years and years. And even after, if they've left the person or they divorced, you don't know that they were in an abusive relationship per se. And then they come out down the line, right? And they tell you, like, yeah, I was in an abusive relationship or abusive marriage. And people are like, what? Oh my, every time I saw you, like, oh my God, I had no idea. I never would have thought that. And so people are left like shocked. You know what I mean? And then people are thinking, like, why did, like, oh my God, like, why didn't you tell me? Like, you know, I would have done something. I would have helped you. I they feel bad for not knowing. And a lot of times it's hard for survivors to even speak out and share their story. I know, one, sometimes people are afraid because sometimes the abuser will still find ways to try to get to them and things like that.
Yeah.
But for you,
it was really hard for me to really come out and seek help because the reputation that I had as a person, I had the reputation of, oh, wow, Nala is, you know, hardcore. She doesn't take anything from nobody. So it was really embarrassing and humiliating to even come out and say, guys, I've been putting up with this.
Right.
You know, and I'm always preaching about know your worth, do this. Like, I was a very big advocate. And then for the first time, I find myself in a situation where I'm questioning my worth. And that was really, really changed, you know, my aspect of it. So now I really want to share my story, not only for the people who feel like they are embarrassed to even come out and say it, but for the people who have loved ones that, because I also had red flags. There's red flags on both ends. There's red flags for the abuser, and there are red flags for, you know, victims of any type of abuse. And I had those red flags all over me. So I want to be able to share what those red flags are for someone who may have a loved one experiencing something and you can't figure out what it is. And then also for the person who is in that situation who is crying out for help without saying, you know, help me.
Help me.
So for me, for my red flags that people saw but they just kind of dismissed was I was really depressed. Like I suffered really, really bad from anxiety and depression. And that, like, I experienced that for the very first time in that relationship. So at that time, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what those feelings and emotions were myself. And so I had it started with the loss of appetite. I stopped eating. And I thought, oh, yay, my diet's working. I don't crave sugar anymore. Well, eventually, I was like, I'm doing good. And so I started losing weight. I was like, yes, things are working. Well, it began to happen excessively at an excessive rate to where, okay, it wasn't just sugar. Now I can't eat breakfast. Now I can't eat lunch, dinner. Wow. I'm not hungry at all. Wow. You know, the thought of food makes me nauseous. I'm losing 60 pounds in 3 months. Like, I'm a pretty fit girl. And so I knew there was a problem was when my butt was flat. I was like, okay, I need to go to the doctor. Something's not right. And I really did not know what it was. And then I developed IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, to where I would just get these pains in my stomach. And I mean, I was on my hands and knees just crying with these sharp pains of just nauseous and just sickness.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I'm in and out of the hospital. They're telling me, we don't know. And then finally, a doctor tells me to go see a gastric person. And he looks at me and he says, Is there a dramatic change that has happened in your life? And I said, yes, I'm in this toxic relationship. And he said, all of your symptoms are signs of severe depression. Now, at that point, I kind of sensed that, okay, I think I'm experiencing anxiety and depression. And so I started looking into more of that. And then the panic attacks started at work where I would just get so anxious and start crying for really no reason. And I couldn't work. I would have to leave. And so that's when I said, oh my gosh, like there is something really wrong with me. And the worst part is like if I go to the doctor, based off of my charts and my blood work, I was the healthiest person that they had seen in there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm in there crying, I'm weak, I'm brittle, you know. And that is why I preach about, you know, my faith, because at that moment, that is when I really had to say, Lord, help me.
Right, yeah.
And the doctors cannot heal me.
Right.
And so for anybody who is suffering, just know you are not the crazy one. Like yes, it is that toxic relationship that is making you sick. And until you realize and accept that, you will never be healed. Once you realize what the sickness is, you have to treat that sickness. And the sickness was him. He was the disease, you know, in my life. And the doctors can't, there's no test for that.
Yeah, right.
The doctor can't say, it's your boyfriend. So, you know, I really had to look in the mirror and say, wow, he is, I was in a lot deeper than I had thought. So when I'm very big on health. So when my health was at jeopardy, I think that's when I broke up with them, but I did not leave.
Right.
It was, you know, the life-threatening incident that made me leave.
Absolutely.
Gosh. Definitely. Those are the signs. And then what was the other? So I had the signs for the person that was being abused.
Yeah, being abused.
So yeah, those are like, you have to watch out for those symptoms of people change of behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, I became distant. Okay. I become distant because there is a reason. I only became distant, you know, to my friends in two situations. One, when I got pregnant in high school, because I was going through a lot, I was, you know, pregnant at 16.
Right.
And when I was in an abusive relationship. So it was just very, you know, traumatizing. So people were asking questions like, hey, you know, you looking skinny, girl. Like, you need to eat. And I'm like, I can't.
Like, you can't. Yeah.
I wish I could, but I can't. And so definitely, like, you know, are distant and not doing the things that they normally do, change of behavior. My boss noticed it. I think my boss was the only one who really said, you know, you need to get help.
Wow.
Because she was a mother. I think she was like in her 40s or 50s, so she knew.
She knew.
She was a mother. She had wisdom. So she was like, baby girl, I know this guy. She knew. Because like, he had brought me flowers. He sent me edibles to my job.
Wow.
And so everybody was like, oh my God, cool.
Right.
My boss said, what did he do to you that made him send you flowers? And I was like, oh wow, she knows. She knew right off the bat.
Mm.
So be my boss, pay attention to people, and if someone needs help, it's okay to ask them, hey, like, is everything okay at home? Don't ignore it. We have to this mindset where we just mind our business. No. If it involves your loved ones who's changing behavior, then it's no longer I'm gonna mind my business. No. Ask them questions. And then for people who need to who are afraid to speak out, just know that you are not alone. I see you. I hear you. Like, we see past all those posts on Facebook. It's like, we know. And so, like, know your worth. Like, it's a brighter side on it. Like, let go of that dead weight. Like, that is the message. Let go of that dead weight and you will thrive. Like, look at my hair is thriving. My skin is so much better. I'm happy. I'm healthy. Like, let it go. Leave it behind.
Absolutely. Gosh, what you said is extremely powerful. And like you mentioned, people who know you, your friends and stuff, they start picking up on the thing. Watch out for the change of behavior, because I can't imagine the situation where if someone, God forbid, chooses who is severely depressed like you, chooses to take their own life, or if somebody loses their life in an abusive relationship, you know, I can't imagine the support system or family and friends on the outside, you know, would probably be beating themselves up saying, if I only, you know what I mean? If I only had really tried to,
step in and intervene, they would be sitting right here. But
right, exactly. And I can't imagine that kind of guilt that would be, that to me could trigger someone to have depression, right? If you knew, like, your boss at least, you know, told you, like, I see what's going on, you know. I can't imagine that. And like you said, I know we have this whole narrative of mind your own business, it doesn't matter, but this is somebody's, like, health, but, like, you know, whole health that's, like, at risk. Their mental health, like, mentally, their, you know, physical health, everything. And then, like you said, you also notice, like, your hair's thriving, your skin's better, you're just so much better once you let go of that weight. It's just, I can't stop saying it. It's so important and so crucial. So for you, did you ever like turn to him and say, like, because like you said, you knew based on how he grew up, he was going through some things as well. Did you ever like turn to him and say, like, I think you need to get help, or maybe we need to get help together? Or did that ever cross, or was kind of like you knew that's something he wouldn't be for, so you didn't even
definitely. I was very blunt about, you know, what my issues were with him. So I was definitely vocal about, yo, like, you need therapy. Like, you know, you're not mentally sound. And he knows he's not, like, he knows his relationship with his mother is the reason why, you know, he struggles with women. So he is too aware of that. Because he has, you know, admitted that. Like, so he is aware, but, you know, that's a whole nother topic on itself, involving, you know, black men trying to get help and therapy. That's a whole nother.
It is.
That's a whole nother hour. but yeah, I was vocal. I even said to him, I said, you know, I have been good to you this entire time, and you're pushing me away. I said, there's going to come a time in your life where you're going to have nothing and nobody because you, you know, sat on the people that, you know, defended you the most.
Right. Yeah.
And sadly to say, that is, like, it was slowly a trickle effect. You know, after our relationship ended, you know, he wasn't, you know, gaining as much success in the boxing world or with other women. They actually reached out to me, was like, is he crazy or am I crazy? That's no girl, he crazy.
Exactly.
So, definitely.
Right. You're big, like you said, you're big on telling, especially encouraging women of color to know their worth. What does that mean to you, that phrase? Because I know, I see you post about it a lot, and it's one of those things where people, you know, older people will tell, you know, young people that all the time, you know, woman, you know your worth, man, know your worth, you know, they say it all the time, but it's easier said than done. So when you think of that, what does that mean to you? What does that look like to you when a person truly knows their worth?
So a person who knows their worth is someone who knows what they deserve. Like, here's what I deserve. I deserve to be loved. You know, I deserve to be treated like this. Here are my list of things that I deserve. But a woman who knows her worth, if you jeopardize any of those, she's going to cut you off and she's going to let you know, like, you have to go because you're not, you know, giving me what I deserve. This is my worth. Mm. And so for me, it's not even just about leaving, but if someone steps out of line, if they talk to you in a disrespectful tone, approach them and say, you know, hey, I don't know where you're from, but, you know, what you just said to me is not how I deserve to be treated to. So if that behavior continues, then I'm going to have to leave.
Right.
Now you're jeopardizing my work.
Right.
So
right.
That's what it means to know your worth. Know what you deserve and then demand it from people.
Mm.
Like, you have to demand what you deserve. That is knowing your worth.
Mm, absolutely. I agree 100%. And I think, too, I mean, it's really hard when you're coming out of, you know, an abusive relationship to kind of build your self-esteem. I can only imagine back up and your confidence level back up after that, because of course the situation you were in unfortunately beat it down, or maybe the person told you you were worthless, you know, or you're never going to amount to anything and things like that. And you kind of, people start to internalize and actually really start believing that and become their own worst critic. So I think that's really big. So, but for you, like you said, thank God that you're out of it. So for the future, 5, 10, 15 years from now, where do you see yourself? Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? What should we be on the lookout for?
5, 10, 15 years from now, you're probably going to see my name on a billboard somewhere.
Yes.
I definitely plan to be very successful. I'll probably be a millionaire by the time the 10-year mark hits. That I am so focused on my goals, just to go into a couple different things. You know, I'm focusing on day trading. That's, you know, one of the things that I do. And then building my businesses as far as, you know, my t-shirt brand and, you know, my clothing line and then my boxing business. So definitely going to water all those seeds and watch them grow. So in the next 5 to 10 years, you will know.
Yes. Just so everybody knows, you heard it here first on the Jared Nicole Show. Because you know when it happens, I'm going to be like, oh, Nas, I see you on Forbes, and be like, Nas made it happen. I'm going to bring up this clip and be like, you heard it here
first.
You
are. This is my first live interview, so thank you, Jared. Thank
Woo,
you.
Yes, no.
Setting the tone, yes.
Setting the tone, for sure. Yeah, no, I think that's great. Have you considered, and I don't know, please tell me a little bit more about your t-shirt business, actually, because, like, have you is it specifically kind of like people of color phrases on the t-shirt, or is it kind of gonna, is it gonna be boxing stuff, is it gonna be domestic abuse, or, like, what
exactly? As of right now, this is one of the t-shirt, which is just the, you know, a Black Pride t-shirt, but
right.
The t-shirt business is going to be basically just quotes.
Okay.
And then there may be like a small little Bible scripture in the corner to go with that quote. So if you want to just read more up on it. But for example, one of the shirts that are in the making is a shirt that says, block his number and focus on your goal.
Mm.
And so once you wear that shirt, it's like, okay, that sets the tone. Like, okay, I'm not going to worry about this boy today. I'm going to just focus on my goals. So,
right.
Definitely just, you know, motivational quotes and then maybe a little scripture to go with it.
Right, absolutely. So for you thus far, what has been the most, I know it's going to sound crazy, but go with me here. What has been the most rewarding thing so far since your journey of overcoming, you know, the abuse, from finding your self-worth again, all of that stuff? What has been your biggest reward thus far, you would say?
I would say my biggest reward is, for the first time in my life, I can look in the mirror and know who I am.
Mm.
So if I don't have to question, you know, who I am or where I'm headed. It's I now know that I have a roadmap, and I know there's going to be roadblocks, but it's I know my destination now. I know who I am. I know what I was meant to do. And I know that I want to inspire other people, and so I know I have that effect. So it's I now know who Naj is. Naj is now more than just a nickname, but it's also a brand. And I just want to transfer that brand and energy, you know, back into the universe.
Yes. Ooh, that was so powerful. I love that. Yes. So finally, last but not least, for people who you know, may have questions for you after the interview or want to reach you and learn more about you or, you know, buy a t-shirt, whatever, can you just go ahead and let us know a little bit about where they can go and get that information and all that jazz?
Most definitely. So right now, my primary contact is through Instagram. My Instagram name is yo__Naj, N-A-J. If you get on, the only thing you'll see now is just, you know, snippets of my clothing brand being, you know, brought in on by pictures, but I'm still doing boxing training, and I recently just started doing day training, not teaching that yet, but if you do want to get some day training tips and some fitness tips and also some nice style and some Black Girl Magic on your page, definitely follow me. And you can just shoot me a DM. I'm very responsive, and any questions, I'll definitely be happy to answer.
Awesome. Sounds great. I forgot it was 2 underscores, so I had to go fix it.
Oh.
Yeah. When you were talking, you were like, yeah, I have it there. And then you were like, underscore this. I was like, oh. And then I was like, let me fix it.
I didn't even notice. That's
yeah. So if you go back and watch the interview and you see my face going, that's what I was doing. That was definitely a typo, but I fixed it. So like she said, you guys, her information is right under there. If you have any questions for her and want to learn a little bit more about her, definitely follow her for sure. But thank you so much, Naj, for coming on the show today and sharing your story with us. Of course, we're rooting for you. We are here for you as well, for sure. And anybody who's in the situation or out of the situation, I know you can definitely reach out to Naj, and she'd be more than happy to talk to you and just, you know, pray for you, encourage you and all that stuff. Because we definitely, especially as women in general, you know, we really need to just continue to support each other and be there for one another as well. And also men too, you know, I think a lot of the times, We leave men kind of out of things, but I would love to have you back on the show for sure and to talk about specifically men, African-American men and African men and, you know, men of color getting therapy and getting help, because in our community, it's definitely one of those kind of stigma things where they, you know, put it out there, right, in public that they need help or talking to an outsider about problems, you know, a lot of people of color find it silly and they don't need it, you know, they just think it's a waste of money and time. And it really is a stigma, but mental health is real and trauma is real. Like you said earlier in the show, if you don't deal with that trauma, you'll find it manifesting in your future relationship. Mm-hmm. So for sure. So that was a really key point, but thank you for coming on the show today. I enjoyed you. For those of you, if you're just now tuning in, unfortunately, we're at the end of the show, but don't worry because you can definitely watch this interview after and we'll have it on YouTube and I'll be sharing it on social media for you guys to watch it. So thank you all so much for tuning in. Again, this is the Jaira Nicole Show every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And I will see you guys back here again next Tuesday. Bye,
guys. Thank you.
Yeah, bye. Thank you, of course. Thank you.